Greetings and welcome back to One True Pod, brought to you by DirecTV Stream. Get your TV together with the best of live and on demand. Learn more at directtv.com. We are the Big 12 Podcast on the Andy Staples Show and Friends podcast feed. Thanks as always for listening. I'm Jason Kersey, and I'm joined today, as always, by my good friends Max Olson and Sam Kahn. Guys, how are we doing today?
Good. We're in the middle of silly season, my friend.
Already.
It has begun.
I mean, even today's off to a silly start. Guys, does Zach Evans play for TCU? What's going on?
Drew Davison of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram says that he was at practice yesterday and that all is good, quote unquote.
All is good. Okay.
We'll see. Apparently, Zach Evans this morning removed all the TCU imagery from his Instagram account, which sounds silly, but at the same time, these days, you kind of have to look a little bit into that.
Well,
stuff,
you know, so. Maybe the youths that listen to our podcast can tell us what that means. I assume that I think we all equate that with like breakups and divorces, don't we?
Yeah.
If people
deleting all the old pictures,
or is that just a cry for attention? I don't really know how people do that on the Instagram these days.
Maybe it was Sam Kahn advising him to do it, since Sam's been on the Zach Evans is being underused train. Maybe Sam's behind all this. I don't know.
I can promise you I have not communicated with Zach Evans. They don't give access to Zach Evans very often at TCU.
Correct. Uh-huh.
I think I don't know for certain, but I think it's only been one time this year. It certainly wasn't at all last year. I know he talked after the Cal game or one of the games this year. So. I have not talked to Zach Evans, not since he was a recruit, so I can promise you I am not the one advising him, nor am I talking to anybody in his family at this time. But yeah, certainly I have been one of the vocal ones that felt like he should have been getting the ball more than he did, at least early in the season. So I guess if that's the way he feels, I certainly can't blame him.
It's always good, I recognize, to lead a podcast with something that may age very poorly within the next 24 hours. So, you know, just wanted to throw it out there.
Yeah, you know what? Why not? It'll be it's out there, so we might as well touch on it. But guys, the main thing we need to talk about today is, as you mentioned, silly season has begun in the Big 12 Conference. Texas Tech firing Matt Wells this week after a 5-3 start to the season. Guys, I feel like we all thought this could happen last year. Mm-hmm. It was a possibility last year. They've decided to go ahead and pull the trigger now. Max, I'll start with you. You wrote a great column about this entire situation and the Texas Tech job in general. Were you surprised by the move that Kirby Hokut made?
Yeah, surprised on the timing. Surprised on the timing part of it. I think if we had, you know, preseason or midseason, whatever, if we had talked about like who's the first coach fired, it would have been Matt Wells. I think the situation was kind of clear that this was a hot seat year for him. You know, after kind of barely saving his job at the end of 2020, and after they lost to Texas 70-35. Started hearing from people about, well, who should we go after? And you kind of figured, okay, this seemed inevitable. And Kirby Hokut used that word, inevitable, in his press conference on Monday. The timing, though, at 5-3, certainly we all know the schedule ahead is brutal. They've got the four best teams in the Big 12 for their final four games. You would think that, you know, they're probably, since they lost to K-State, and I know that game was especially painful in the way that they lost it, at 5-3, you'd think, you know, they're about to play Oklahoma and then they have a week off. You would think maybe you get blown up by OU and then you make a change, or you just wait till the end of the season, but kind of do the searching in the background. So I didn't see it coming on Monday, and I don't know that Matt Wells saw it coming on Monday. He probably thought that on Sunday, once you get through the day and nothing happens, that, all right, let's get focused on Oklahoma this week. But Monday morning, he gets the pink slip, and you know, Sam, what do you think? I mean, with Sonny Cumbie taking over here, I mean, do you think this team can get to a bowl game still?
Yeah, I do. I think there is a degree of possibility that the players rally around the situation and rally around Sonny Cumbie, the interim head coach and offensive coordinator. During his press conference on Tuesday, he actually got a little emotional when he was talking about the situation, which I think speaks to kind of how much he cares about Texas Tech and that program. He's got a lot of roots there, played there, is from the region. And I think the players probably recognize that and understand that. And I think, you'll see them play hard for him. And so that gives them a chance, in my opinion, to win one of these last four games. And I did not overlook that he said, we want to give these guys a great experience in their last five games. And meaning five, meaning they're going to play another after the regular season is over. At least that's the intention for them. I do think it's possible just because this is college football, man. I mean, look at how this season has gone. You never know what you're going to get when it comes to the sport. But at the same time, it is a tall task. It's difficult. They've got a situation where offensively they've been struggling. They're without their starting quarterback, Tyler Shuck, who's been out since the fourth week of the season with a broken collarbone. But they've got talented players. They've got a deep defense that has been up and down. So I think it's hard to say if they will, but I do think this team will play hard for Sonny. And I'm going to be really interested to see how he handles it because he's been a coordinator for the duration of most of his career. So I'm curious to see how he handles being the head guy here for the next 4 weeks.
We're going to be joined here in a bit by Chris Level, the publisher of RedRaiderSports.com, to help further break this down. But guys, I'm curious what you guys think about what are reasonable expectations for Texas Tech. You know, Mike Leach set the bar pretty high here 10, 15 years ago. What should fans expect? Is eight wins not good enough? Is that good enough? I'll start with Sam on this one.
Yeah, I think Kirby Hokut was asked about this, and should you go to a bowl every year?
Max, I asked him. Should people, you know, should the expectation be going to bowls every year and competing for top 25 every year?
Yeah, and he said absolutely. Now, do I think Texas Tech should be a top 25 team every year? No. But should they be a bowl team every year? Yeah, probably so. I think in the state of Texas, given – I know they're in a little bit far outpost. They're in West Texas. It's not super close to Dallas, not close to East Texas, not close to Houston, which are the three hotbeds of recruiting in the state. But it still is a talent-rich state. West Texas has good players as well. And that Texas Tech does prioritize the Dallas-Fort Worth area in recruiting. I think going to a bowl, which is 6-6 at least every year, I think that's a reasonable expectation, especially when you have, you know, three non-conference games. I don't think it's out of the question to ask you to win three of your six or four of your six Big 12 games. I'm sorry, four of your nine, yeah. Three of your nine or four of your nine Big 12 games. So I think it's reasonable to expect that. And to be a top 25 team every so often, not all the time, once in a while, and compete for the conference title maybe once a decade. I think that's I don't think Texas Tech fans are asking for much more than that, and I think that's a reasonable expectation. And when you look at, Max, you wrote it in your story that 89 teams have been in the top 25. What was the stat that you had?
Oh, yeah, it's more than that. Yeah, it's there's been 97 teams have won 10 plus games in a season since 09, I believe, since, you know, Texas Tech lasted it in 08 with Leach, obviously. More than 90 FBS programs have had a 10 win season since then, and Texas Tech hasn't.
Yeah. And then the other thing that you mentioned was that Texas Tech, since Mike Leach, since 2010, they've spent a total of 16 weeks in the top 25, worse than every current and future Big 12 member except Kansas.
And eight of them was in one season, was in Kingsbury's debut season, and they've barely touched the top 25 since then, and never did under Matt Wells. Which is, you know, yeah, that's the thing where I know that I know Texas Tech folks get very, you know, defensive about this because people see, oh, you fired a 5-3 coach, what did you expect? That kind of thing. I don't think that the aim here is unreasonable. Like, and I think, you know, when Kirby Hokut fired Cliff and said he wants to be elite, now that's where you sort of like, all right, what are you talking about? Like, there's not a history of sustained elite at Texas Tech. Not that you shouldn't aim for it. Just a quick aside here though, like, so they were going to fire him if he won six or seven games. So what was the reasonable expectation for this season?
Yeah, that's my question, because I always thought if they went 7-5, went to a bowl game, that I thought he'd buy himself another year. But clearly, if you're moving on to 5-3, that was not the case.
I just don't get that about this business, where it's like you give someone another year, they make some changes, you're not really like doing a whole lot to assure them that they're going to be the guy long term, And then as soon as like you lose the first game, it's over and they're going to start looking for someone to replace you. And they're just sort of like waiting for you to fail to fire you. Like, why don't just make the change at the end of 2020? I know it's like you don't want the embarrassment of firing a coach after 2 years and paying the buyout money and all that stuff. And maybe that was just a stall to have to pay less for this. But you know what I mean? Like, what was the point of giving him this extra year if you weren't even going to let him finish out the season?
Right. And I think trajectory is probably the best way to put it is, even though the record is good on paper, Kirby Hocutt, like you said, used the word inevitable. And I think, to me, it goes back to the way they lost. And even yeah,
that's how
their
it is
second
the
win.
It's always the way.
The second win that they had against Stephen F. Austin, they had to get a fourth down stop late in that game, you know, deep in their own territory to secure that game, which Stephen F. Austin is a good FCS program, but it's still an FCS program. And so that, I think, started a little bit of a bad taste in some of the fans' mouths. Then the 70-point debacle that they allowed to get dropped on them against Texas.
And you lose Shuck
then
in
you
that
give
game.
Up, you lose Shuck in that game, which is unfortunate. And that's the other thing I think that should be noted is that, man, they've lost two of their best transfers along the way, Marquise Waters and Tyler Shuck, but for the season. Or, well, Shuck out at least till late the season, right. And then Marquise is out for the rest of the year. But then you dropped 52. They left 52 scored on them at home against TCU in a 3-touchdown loss at home, a TCU team that's not very good, by the way, right now. And then that Kansas State game, the way they lost, where they were up 14, all they needed to do was score in the second half, not make critical mistakes like they did with the 3rd and 34 with a penalty that kept the game-winning drive alive, neutral zone infractions at their own goal line that allowed K-State to score.
Safety.
Safety where one of their transfers got blown up and Sir Roderick Thompson got tackled for a loss in the end zone. Yep. So all those little things, just I think it's the way they lost. And then you go back to the Texas game last year, how they lost that game. Those things, I think, have lingered in Texas Tech fans' mind and have left them frustrated. And I think that's what kind of made the cause for his dismissal so much so strong.
How do you see that, Jason, just from your perspective? Like, should Texas Tech, TCU, Baylor, should those all be at that 6-win mark at least every year? Because I know that somebody has to lose games in this conference.
Right.
But you would think in the state of Texas, at least, there's a belief that you have access to such good players in your different regions of the state there. Do you think that's fair that all those fan bases should kind of expect to have that kind of floor all the time?
Sure. I definitely think that's absolutely a fair expectation because they've all done it before. We've seen it happen before. And Texas Tech has some things going for it. And so I do think that it's completely fair to expect that they could win 6 games a year. I do wonder about the wisdom of pulling the plug, like you said, Max, in the middle of the season when you could have done it at the end of last year. You've chosen to give this guy another chance. He's had some injuries. He has a new offensive coordinator.
Right.
I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, how'd that hit you when that news dropped?
I was a little surprised. I wouldn't have been surprised maybe if they lose out the rest of this year and then it happens at the end of the year. But for it to happen now, maybe they just want to get a head start on looking for the next guy, which I think is understandable, particularly when you're probably going to make a serious run at Sonny Dykes and maybe he'll have other suitors. All right, we're going to get into all of this and more with Chris Level, the publisher of RedRaidersports.com. Let's go ahead and go over to that right now. Max and Sam had a chance to catch up with Chris about all this craziness going on in Lubbock.
All right, we're pleased to be joined by Chris Level, publisher of RedRaidersports.com. Good buddy of mine here in this business, also the sideline reporter for Red Raider Games. Chris, thank you first of all for making a little time for us this week. How is your week going?
It's wild. Oh, by the way, there's a game this weekend on national television against the top 5 team in the country in Oklahoma. But yeah, this was kind of uncharted for, I mean, I've been around this program for about 21 years now since Mike got here is when I really started doing some of this stuff. And this has never been a midseason type town, if that makes sense. So this was the timing of this was certainly threw everybody off a bit. I don't know if I was surprised by the end result as much as I was the timing, but I think Kirby and those folks had their reasoning on that. But yeah, it's been a wild week filled with a lot of emotions, and the fan base is the reaction is very. That there's no doubt that these people are very engaged with the football program. Apathy had kind of set in, but we're hearing from there's a lot of people interested in what's going to go on here for sure.
How you obviously you've known Sonny Cumbie a long time. You know, I think that there's probably a reaction by people on Monday. You know, they're 5-3. Why are they throwing away this season? I'm sure that that's not the case for this staff and these players. But how do you think they're going to respond this week? Like you said, against Oklahoma, and just the rest of the way, you know, responding to this pretty daunting challenge of the schedule that's ahead and trying to get one more win.
Yeah, Max, I think the tricky part about the timing was this is the way the schedule lays out here on a weekly basis is Sunday they do practice. They had a team meeting and a practice, a light one, mind you, and Matt was still the head coach. And then you come in Monday in mid-morning, there starts to be one meeting that leads to the next, and then the staff is told and the team is told, and that's the big game planning day. And so largely that day was, I mean, you could argue that in some ways Sunday and most of Monday were kind of lost. But yeah, I've known Sonny. Think about this for Sonny. He's like a skeleton key here for Texas Tech. He is a walk-on. He is earned a scholarship, starting quarterback, broadcaster, position coach, GA, coordinator, and now head coach. I mean, so that is a unicorn. And I mean, I don't know of anybody that would have held every – you know, and he's on the call when Harold throws it to Crabtree. He's a broadcaster at that point. I mean, it's just like the whole thing is wild. But
forgot about that. That's amazing.
Yes, it is. I mean, I don't. And so Sonny is perfect for this situation in the next 4 to 5 weeks. He is extremely well respected and liked, and obviously played here and is from nearby Snyder. And I think those kids will play hard for him. It may not be enough, but I'll be shocked if you don't get a really just good effort. They may not be good enough. Their heads are spinning. They're processing all of this, player, coach alike, and not certain about their futures professionally, or if you're playing them, you're going to still be around here and all that stuff. But all you can do is roll your sleeves up and make the best of it. Now, they will get a chance to kind of pause after this week because there is a bye week next week. And that leads to the question, why didn't they just wait until after the Oklahoma game and then go into the bye week? And I'm only left to wonder, maybe they knew what direction they were ultimately going to go and thought, what if they go to Oklahoma and somehow pull it off? Then what do you do? And I guess they just wanted to avoid that potential outcome. So, but those are decisions that are made much higher up than me.
Well, and what school did the AD go to?
Kansas State. Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying that's the reason, but you know, every game there's always a little something extra with those ones, I'm sure.
Well, they've beaten you 10 out of 11 times now.
Wow. Yeah. And
10 of 11.
Did that feel, I've talked to folks around the program who just sort of feel like that feeling set in again of like, oh man, something bad's going to happen. Like do you feel like the way that game turned in the second half, you know, walking out of that game for you, like, did you feel like that was one of those that just, obviously you've seen too many of them, but did you feel like maybe the way that game ended also just maybe brought that closure?
Yeah, Max, I think that the way you lost the three games that you lost this year was as much a part of this storyline. Looking back on it now, knowing what we know now, going to Austin and just not being competitive, losing by 5 touchdowns, losing to TCU the way you did at home. I mean, TCU's lost 4 or 5. The only one that they got was against you, and you just were out of that game really quickly. And then being up 24-10 and then being outscored or being shut out, I should say, in the second half. It was just one of those things where you could kind of see this playing out in the second half in slow motion. Not to say that Kansas State doesn't play that way anyways, because they had some 12, 13, 14 play drives. And it feels like, man, this is just like, you know, but you just wanted to like run out there and call a real life timeout. Remember like the Saved by the Bell when Zach Morris would just like go and then address the audience. But you just want to do something to stop it, and you just couldn't. And you never know when the last time is going to be the last time. But I mean, part of my broadcasting stuff is after the games, home or away, I'd go visit with Matt and for the radio broadcast. And I'm over there waiting for him and I'm dreading it. I don't want to have to do this. And he doesn't either. He always handled that with complete class. And I've always appreciated that. But I said, Coach, these are really difficult to do. And he handled it great. But after we turned the recorder off, I mean, he just, you could just tell how gutted he was. And I knew that this wasn't trending well. And then you're staring at a game going to Oklahoma. But I didn't know that that would be the last time that I would essentially, I mean, I'm supposed to have a coach's show with him this week that it was canceled. I mean, it's just stuff like that. You just don't, but this business is crazy. And that winning is what matters. And so we're clear here too. That's the only reason that Matt was, it was results on the field. There was right. nothing else. He was wonderful to everybody. And I just don't know if he was ultimately ever truly accepted here. But it just wasn't happening, I guess, is what Kirby and those guys felt. So decided to make a change.
Yeah, Chris, I wanted to touch base on that particular point because I felt like that when the search happened in 18 and there were some rumors that got floated out about Mike Leach might be interested, Dana Holgorsen might be interested. Did some of that excitement and that familiarity that the fan base has with that and the tie to the heyday, so to speak, and then the fact that they go, Kirby Hokut goes and gets Matt Wells, who's a little bit of an outsider, different, you know, not necessarily any ties to this state or this university. Do you think he was working against that to some degree from the point that he got on? Not so much that it colored their view, but if he didn't win right away, that it was always going to be
poison the well a little bit, you're saying, Sam, right, from the start there.
Right. Yeah. I guess, do you think there's a degree of validity to that?
I think you nailed it. Yeah. And I think, let me think about it. Mike then ends up being in the SEC. Cliff is now 7-0. I mean, all these things are at some level like a factor or a storyline. And I think you can probably go back to Waco of all places, because that's where Matt's wife went to college, but you can go back to Waco in his first year. And if you remember that game, Jet Duffy is your quarterback. We'll get to the quarterback part of this at some point, but Jet Duffy is your quarterback. He's your backup. And you essentially outplay and beat a Matt Rule team, but because of a fumble that you recover that's called not a fumble, and then it goes to overtime and you lose, and the Big 12 comes back and says, we screwed that up. And then they get mad at Kirby Hokut for telling everybody the Big 12 told us they screwed it up. He's reprimanded and all that stuff. Yeah. But it was those games that you could never get over the hump on. And it would call it bad luck, call it snake bit. I mean, Texas last year.
Yeah.
You're up 15 points with 3 minutes to go. And
when Sir Roderick scores, that game should be over.
Right. And I think, and so I think that Kirby looked at Saturday, I guess, and whoever else is deciding this, and just felt like this isn't, it's just not meant to be, I guess. But they just could never win that one game to get, put some money in the bank and create some equity with the fan base, because you're right. He wasn't a known quantity. And I think Kirby and the folks making the decision when they hired Matt, it was almost, I don't want to say they purposely went outside the family, if you will, but I think they wanted something different. Because Tuberville was outside the family. It didn't work. And then they brought somebody really close to the situation and played here in Cliff. And so I think it was kind of opposite theory is what happened. But, yeah, he was always working against that.
Yeah, and also I'm curious, how much of this goes back to just general fan frustration, not necessarily just with Wells, but just with the trajectory of the programs? They haven't been to a bowl game since 2017. I know Max wrote it yesterday. Since 2010, they've only spent 16 total weeks in the top 25. They seem to have been surpassed by a lot of programs. How much of it is just fan angst on the whole for this extended struggle that this program has had?
Oh, I think Kirby and the folks in charge were clearly listening to the noise. I think it wasn't very popular last December when Matt almost didn't make it past that. And I think they decided, no, we're going to stick with this thing, but we're going to have to make a change. And that's when Cumbie was brought on and David Yost was let go. And I think Sonny brought a lot of what was needed, which was kind of that connection to what we're talking about. And he brought a lot of energy and personality and all those things. And I think that certainly played out. But yeah, I think to your point, the noise was very loud. And I you know, with the website and our radio show every day in the afternoon. I mean, it's just one of those where it was pretty overwhelming, and I hated it because Matt was, he's a good person, and people don't care about that in this business. It's all about wins, but I want to make sure people understand that's a good dude, man. It just didn't work here, but he's about the right things. I think he changed a lot of things. He probably leaves it better than he found it. And that's not to take a shot at Cliff. I think Cliff was in a weird deal because he was kind of lame duck for a couple of years, and it was very difficult to recruit under those circumstances. I mean, quarterbacks would say, can we meet with the athletic director? And can you assure us that Coach Kingsbury will be coaching my son? And, you know, those assurances couldn't, you know, you're just kind of like, you know, and then, but, you know,
and that's how West Texas kids end up committing to Baylor at that time, right? I mean, come on.
A little bit. Yeah, a little bit. That's right.
Other people were kind of able to prey on that a bit and get some players out of there. Look at what Abram Smith's doing right now.
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, Jacob Zeno is the example that I give you.
Yeah, I remember that
just
one.
Now entering the portal. But his dad specifically, that was like top target. And they wanted to meet with everybody associated with Tech. And I think had there been an assurance that, you know, Cliff would have remained here, he commits to Texas Tech, but he couldn't do it. He ended up at Baylor, and that didn't end up working either. But still, it's just a cautionary tale, I guess.
Yeah, as we, you know, shift into search mode here for the next 5 weeks too. I'm curious.
That's a long search too, man.
It is a long time. I know. As we start this off, you know, I certainly think there's a lot of positives to this job. I know you know that. But what's your sense of, I guess, maybe where Texas Tech fans should hope this goes? Or, you know, certainly the names out there, you know, Sonny Dykes and Jeff Traylor get a lot of attention. I'm sure that those guys will be up for many jobs. But where, I guess, as this thing launches and there could be lots of twists and turns, I guess, where do you think Texas Tech fans and folks like you who know this program so well, where do you hope it goes?
I've probably been asked a dozen times in the last day or so, who would you pick? And it's impossible for me to answer that without knowing, okay, because each candidate, like who do they bring with them? You know, like that's as much a part of this thing as anybody.
Yeah.
And I think that's ultimately kind of what pleased Kirby with Matt when he hired him 3 years ago is that he's bringing both coordinators with him. And that's what they kind of wanted, that component. But, you know, Kirby talked a lot about ties to the state of Texas and unifying the fan base. Does that candidate exist? I think there'll be some split no matter what you do. And this is all a crapshoot. There are no guarantees short of hiring Nick Saban. There's no guarantees when you're going to hire a coach. And that's the scary part about this deal. I think they have figured out that they want to really put a lot of resources into the quote-unquote staff pool to allow somebody not just to bring who they want and hire what they want, but keep them. Because if you go back and look at what Mike did years ago, he gets so much credit. But Dana, Seth Luttrell, Sonny Dykes, Bill Biedenbaugh, Dennis Simmons, Dave Aranda, I mean, these are all people that spent a lot of time in Lubbock, Texas. Art Briles. I mean, it just goes on. And that would credit Mike for being able to, you know, put those pieces together. And so I think that is as much about this search as anything is, what does Coach Dykes, Coach Traylor, whoever else they want to talk to, what can they bring with them and what can they surround him with and allow them to kind of develop? And because heading into still more uncertainty with realignment, you got to get this right. You got to start winning and being competitive and relevant very, very soon.
Since you mentioned the name, I want to ask you, certainly Kirby Hokut was asked about if Art Briles will be a candidate for this job. You know that there are some important people that wanted to hire Art Briles last year and want to hire Art Briles now. I think, especially on social media, you see people sort of paint with a broad brush here and say, oh, crazy Texas Tech fans want our, like, do you think the fan base would actually support that? I mean, there's all these reasons why they shouldn't, but do you think that people would get behind that? Or do you think people would in Lubbock, you know, would they just be just as upset as everybody else if that was the move?
I think that Kirby was, this is my take. I think Kirby answers the question of, is Art Briles going to be a candidate, by saying, we want somebody that will unify the fan base, because I find it very hard to believe that Art Briles will be able to do that. There are plenty of people here that are in two different camps. he did no wrong. He's been at, you know, that it's been explained away. He will do this job for a lot less money than what a lot of other folks will. He's coached here. He went to school here. A lot of people around here know him. I mean, Wes Kitley is one of his very good friends, who's the national champion track coach here. There's a lot of connections here, but there are people that would say, I'll never support that university another day in my life if you make that move. And so, and there's people on just very opposite ends of this deal. And that's why I say, like, for him and like somebody like Kendall, yeah, it would be, that would be a very difficult sell in my opinion. But I wouldn't talk in absolutes or rule out anything. I just, that part, I think Kirby's kind of laying the groundwork there. And there's people very high up that, you're right, still like, man, like, at least vet that candidate, at least run out that ground ball. But I just don't know if everybody could ever be on the same page, of the folks deciding who needs to be the head coach, much less because the PR hit you would take would be massive too. And understandably,
and not temporary.
No,
probably not.
No. And the thing is that I think about that too is, and Kirby alluded to it when he was asked about it, he said that we want to win, but we also believe that we can hire somebody with integrity. And obviously, you know, with Briles' situation, being in charge of a program that, you know, had an open culture of sexual assault going on for his players, obviously that doesn't fit the bill. I think my take was that the way he answered that was, I'm going to satisfy the people who are in his camp and not rule him out today. But at the end of the day, I think his body language and the way he talked was, we're not going to probably go down that road. That was just my take on it.
And it's interesting because it's not just Art. It's Kendall Briles and it's Jeff Lebby. They're all right. And those, you know, I mean, his son and his son-in-law were in Waco too, but they're, you know, obviously at Arkansas and Ole Miss and doing their thing. So that part is a very interesting dynamic for sure. I don't know. That would be an interesting press conference and an interesting early on tenure for anybody that was associated with that. But again, I don't want to sit here and act like that I could tell you they have been all ruled out. I don't think that is the case either. So I think it's very early on in the process.
Just out of curiosity, what are your thoughts on Dykes and Traylor and how either of them would fit?
Yeah, I mean, Sonny spent a lot of time around here. I mean, he knows what this job is. I part of me thinks that he would love to come back here because of his dad and because of his time here. He played baseball here. And part of me thinks he wouldn't want to do that too. So I'm not real sure what to think. But, I mean, he understands what this job is. His brother Rick still lives here. You know, I think his sister lives here in Lubbock. And, you know, he's got a really good job right now. I think he's very well paid there. There's probably at this point not a ton of pressure on him because he's gotten that thing turned around and those people at SMU are yearning for that. But their league is a bit different too now than it was, say, 2 or 3 months ago. And it's not going to be as relevant as it was. So that it's an interesting – he would be more expensive. And I think Tech would be more than willing to compensate staff and him for what that would cost. But that's then Traylor is the interesting one too, because he doesn't have any ties to West Texas at all or Tech. It's all East Texas and Central. You know, that's where his bread has been buttered. And – he doesn't have this like ready-made staff to bring in either. That could be a pro and a con. I don't know, here's a fact. Here's an undeniable fact. Sonny Dykes and Jeff Traylor will make a lot more money to coach football next year, wherever they are, than they're making right now. I mean, bottom line, that part you could is an undeniable fact.
So wrapping up here, thank you so much for coming on here, Chris. We really appreciate it. How are you going to get through the next 5 weeks?
Well, okay, so luckily there are still games to be played. Okay, so that kind of breaks up I'm not sure what I'm going to see or be a part of when we get on the plane Friday to go to Norman, because it's so outside the box. I think everybody I will sit back and really enjoy watching Sonny do his thing for however long that is and root like heck for him, because he's good people. He stands for the right things. There's not many quality folks or not near as many as there need to be in college football better than Sonny is. But, you know, basketball's about to start. That may help kind of like offer up a diversion for a lot of folks. Everybody's excited about the basketball program here, but it's going to be a lengthy search. I mean, think about it. It's October the 27th right now. Your last game is on November the 27th. I can't imagine that you can able put it together and have an announcement until what, that Sunday, Monday after that?
Well, I mean, the guys we're talking about here, are they in conference title games? They are.
Exactly. Right? Exactly. And they probably can dictate, here's how we'll do this. And I won't coach the bowl game. I will coach the bowl game. And this goes for so many of potential candidates. So the timing is going to be really interested in, you know, does Tech get itchy and like want to put something down and make it solid before everybody else starts making moves too? I mean, you know, there's, cause I mean, whatever LSU and USC and others do, it starts a domino effect. And I think Texas Tech wanted to be on the front end of this as opposed to back end and didn't want to be the last horse drinking from the trough.
Yeah. That makes a ton of sense. And it's going to be a wild ride from here till now. Chris Lovell, thank you so much, man. And best of luck to you here the rest of the way.
Max, Sam, appreciate you having me on, man. Yes, sir.
All right. Thanks again to Chris Lovell for taking some time during what I'm sure is a crazy week for him to chat with us here on One True Pod. And guys, now it's time for picks, our favorite time of the week. And first, as always, let's update the standings. None of us had we all had pretty terrible weeks, pretty god awful on the whole. So the standings are pretty well in the same place that they were before relative to each other. Sam is in first place, 36-25, having a heck of a year. I'm in second, 32-29. And then Max, you didn't make up much ground this week, buddy. 27-34 is where you're at right now.
It's all right. We're trying to get to 500 here.
Yeah. As a sign of how bad we were this week, I went 3-5 and gained a game on you guys.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Not good.
That was a rough week. This started when I saw the Friday night Memphis UCF result. I was like, oh no, I was like, this is not a good start. And then the 11 a.m. games kicked off and that Kansas Oklahoma. And I was like, oh boy.
It's possible that I shouldn't have suggested that we start picking the future Big 12 members. It's possible. Like our end of year record on them is going to be awful. I'm guessing
it's going to be bad. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, we're doing our best. We're doing our best. But yeah, the OU Kansas game got all of us. We'll get into that in a minute. But the Jayhawks.
Hey, we are constantly trying to find a way to get KU covering. Right. We're constantly trying to talk ourselves into it.
And the one time none of us picked them to cover, they go ahead and cover against the perennial power in the conference. So. Yeah. All right, well, let's get right to it, guys. We got a great slate of games this week, I think, starting with Texas at Baylor. Baylor is a 3-point favorite. Who wants to take this one first?
I'll start because I'm going to be there. I'm going to be at McLean Stadium front and center for this one to see the Bears and the Texas Longhorns. This is a tough one because Texas, I think, at their highs have looked like possibly as good as anybody in the country or definitely anybody in the conference. We saw that in Red River, but their lows, they've been inconsistent, and I wonder where they are mentally coming out of this off week. Baylor, in my opinion, has been one of the most consistent teams in the Big 12, and given that, I think I'm going to take Baylor to win and cover at home. This is going to be a big game. I think it's going to be a big crowd, and just the consistency that they've shown to me, I think, makes me more comfortable with picking them than it does with up and down Texas.
Yeah, I think I'm back in sort of like prove it mode here for Texas, you know, where I'm going to take Baylor -3 as well. Because and I'm not saying Texas can't win this game. They certainly can. And you're right, Sam, coming out of the idle week there. What tweaks did you make? Did you get people healthy? You know, how different does Texas look? But you're right. We've seen some really good. And we've seen some, you know, especially in the second half, we've seen the weaknesses there. So I like Baylor in this game. I think Baylor's just rolling. I think Baylor's just keeps building a ton of confidence. And I think covering the 3, I think it'll be a close game, but I would lean Baylor too. And, you know, if Texas wins this game, maybe I'm more comfortable picking them in the future.
That's kind of how I am too with Texas, Max. I think they need to prove it first, so I'm going to go with Baylor as well. I've been really impressed with the job Dave Aranda's done this year, and I think they get the big win at home. And I do think McLean will be rocking. That'll be a fun game to be at, Sam. Next up, we got Iowa State at West Virginia. The Cyclones.
Clones are back, guys.
The clones are back.
I told you. I wasn't giving up on them.
Iowa State coming off a huge win at home over Oklahoma State, handing the Cowboys their first loss of the year. They seem to be doing, you know, the Iowa State thing where they start off and we write them off, and here they are at the end of the year coming on strong. So, Max, let's throw it to you first. Iowa State, 7-point favorite, by the way.
7-point favorite on the road in Morgantown. And, you know, look, as usual, I mean, I think maybe it's time for me to try picking opposites a little bit still. Try and sprinkle that into the strategy here because of my lack of trust in myself. I think I'm going to take West Virginia +7. I think it's a closer game. It was not a close game last year, West Virginia, Iowa State. That was a beat 'em down game. And I'm sure that stuck with West Virginia a little bit. And I think that, you know, I could see Iowa State rolling. But, you know, I think seven's kind of a lot to cover in some of these Big 12 games right now, especially as we head toward the final month. So I think I'll take the West Virginia +7. Not saying I would take West Virginia straight up, but I think it's close.
Sam?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Max. I'm going to take West Virginia. I liked how they looked in Fort Worth last week against TCU. Jared Deggy played well. Letty Brown had a good showing. They ran the ball well. Garrett Green had a big play. I think Iowa State wins this game. I think Iowa State's going to continue to roll, but I'm going to take West Virginia to cover the 7 at home. Being a 7-point dog at home is a little bit large for my taste, so I'm going to take the Mountaineers.
I'm going to quote from The Godfather Part 3, every time I think I'm out, they pull me back in. Iowa State has pulled me back in completely. I am back on the Cyclone train. Give me the Cyclones -7.
Damn it. Oh, he's going to get us on that one. Okay. All right, good pick.
Next up, we got Texas Tech, as we've spent a lot of time on this podcast discussing Texas Tech at Oklahoma, which is coming off a very uninspiring win in Lawrence, Kansas. And we'll talk a little bit more about the Jayhawks when we get down to their game this week. But, guys, is there a reason to be concerned about the Sooners? 19.5-point favorites.
Jason, should they be a 20-point favorite against anybody?
No, probably not.
I mean, guys, should they? And I'm not saying they're not very good. I'm not saying they're not a top-5 team, but should they be a 20-point favorite this week?
Does it feel like they're 8-0 at all to anyone? It doesn't to me. I keep having to remind myself that they're 8-0. So
What was that like for you in Lawrence? I mean, when KU sent out the tweet that anyone could just walk through the gates and sit in the stadium, I thought about getting in my car and making that trip.
what's that drive for you? A couple hours?
Probably closer to 3. I also did occur to me, like, am I going to spend Sunday in Lawrence after they beat Oklahoma? Like, am I going to just need to hop in my car and get down there?
Yes.
What was that like for you? Like, was it like a Twilight Zone-y kind of thing where you're watching this thinking like, oh my God, what if this actually did happen?
Yeah, because this is the one program where there's never been any concern that Oklahoma is going to lose to them. Now, I will go back to 2018 when Oklahoma had one of the worst defenses in college football, and Puka Williams
did some things that night.
But they still won by 15.
Yeah.
This game, they were losing 10-0 at halftime, guys. They were losing 10-0 at halftime to Kansas. And so it was very
KU
weird.
KU was doing the keep away game perfectly.
Yes. Yeah, they flawlessly executed that game plan. And I'll tell you what, if Caleb Williams doesn't make a very heady play and reach in and take the ball from Kennedy Brooks on that 4th-and-1.
Do you think they lose?
I think there's a good chance they lose.
Yeah?
Oh my God. I think there's a good chance they lose if that doesn't happen.
We had a real beat.
That was
situation.
One of the most unbelievable plays I've ever seen. I know. I was stunned to see that.
I mean, y'all, I've never seen that. You see it on, like, people maybe trying to pitch, you know, after an interception or something, like, or last right. play of the game or something. I've never seen that on offense.
No, never. And I didn't know the rule. Did you guys know the rule?
No, I did not.
No, I was in that moment. I don't know how y'all saw it, but I did wonder about the forward progress part of that, too, a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, that too.
It's a real bang thing that went on there. Yeah.
Yeah. So Oklahoma, 19.5-point favorite. I'll start us off, and I'm going to take Texas Tech to cover, OU to win, and that's just because OU, five of their wins this year are by one possession. And the Kansas game probably should have been a one possession win. So I think I like, and you know, maybe there's some element of Texas Tech coming in fired up after what has happened this week. I don't know. I just, for some reason, I think they cover the 19 and a half. I still think OU wins the game.
Yeah, I think I'm going to, I think the Texas Tech will come in fired up. And one thing to keep in mind here with Tech is they have played really well away from home. They won at West Virginia. When they won at Kansas, obviously it's Kansas, but heck, I mean, Oklahoma.
Is it Kansas? Is it Kansas?
That's right. That's right. And then, you know, they won what virtual road game. It was neutral technically, but it was a virtual road game at Houston to start the year. So they've played well away from home, but I can't get past where I think they're just struggling offensively right now, especially the way they struggle in the second half. And I think they're going to play hard and they'll get an early boost, but I think I will chalk up last week's OU loss to just a clunker. You're going to have a clunker, and you're going to have a clunker in conference, and it happens. And so I think since Caleb Williams has gone here up until that moment, they've been pretty good. And so I'm going to say that they bounce back, they get right, Oklahoma covers.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, out of principle, OU by 20 is iffy. And I don't know, like, you know, you take Matt Wells out of the equation, but everything else is kind of the same for Tech. And I'm not saying that I don't really necessarily think their players are all going to pack it up and you know, sort of mail it in here for the rest of the season. I don't think so. I could see them being, I don't know. I'm really curious to see just sort of how these players react. Clearly you can tell that I'm stalling here because I don't know what the hell to do. I'll go with OU to cover, and I don't feel good about it at all.
You're very reluctant.
Jason, does OU need some, like, to, you know, next week we start the playoff talk and everything gets all reframed and all these narratives pop up that we all have to abide by, right? Does OU need some style points this week?
I think more than style points, the defense needs to play well. The defense cannot have another clunker, because this is 2 weeks in a row where they've looked terrible. I'm actually writing about this for tomorrow. If it's starting to feel a little bit like 2018 again, guys, the offense is starting to hum along. They've sort of found their groove. They're playing well, and the defense can't get off the field. They can't get pressure on the quarterback, and they have no depth in the secondary. And so all of those things, and they have some injuries. That four of their starters are out. That should be mentioned. But Oklahoma's defense really needs to prove something, because I think the last couple years, OU fans have gotten frustrated by the playoff talk, because every time the playoff talk came around in 2020 and 2019, the question about Oklahoma was always, well, they can't play defense. When that wasn't really true, they were playing better defense. This year, that's true. This year, we're right back into that. Their defense is bad right now. So I think they need to have a good game more than the offense does.
Gotcha.
All right. So moving on, we got TCU at Kansas State. The Wildcats, a 3.5-point favorite. Max?
Ooh, Frogs need this one.
Bad.
Frogs need this one. I think that I saw Bill Connolly put out there, you know, based on SP+, what some of the odds of getting to six wins are for some of these teams. I think TCU's at 45% in terms of getting to six, getting to a bowl game here. So, man, this thing could go either way. And Gary Patterson really needs this one. I think I'll take TCU plus 3.5. But boy, this feels like one of those coin flip games.
Yeah, it does. I'm going to take Kansas State to win and cover at home. I don't trust TCU at this point.
Yeah,
they have to give me a reason to trust them, and they just haven't. So I'm going to take K-State to win. Skylar Thompson, I thought, played well last week. The comeback win over Tech. Deuce Vaughn got it going a little bit, mostly in the receiving game, but still, I mean, he was able to help them get over the hump there and had three touchdowns. I think until TCU proves otherwise, I got to go with K-State.
I got you.
And I will go with K-State as well. Next up are K Kansas Jayhawks, our Kansas Jayhawks here on One True Pod.
America's Kansas Jayhawks. Kansas back. Yep.
Are playing at Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State, a 30.5-point favorite.
No respect.
Guys, we have been trying to pick Kansas against the spread all year. Then they go ahead and decide to cover against Oklahoma of all teams. So I don't know. I'm going to take Kansas to cover again. I've just like Iowa State, I'm right back in. Right back in. Rock chalk. I'm right back in. What about you guys?
So they were 0-6 against the spread until last week. And then we all picked against them, and then they covered against Oklahoma. Oklahoma State, obviously, coming off the loss. Oklahoma State's a way better team, obviously. So my question is can Oklahoma State score enough to win by 30 or 31?
That's a great question.
30 and a half. And I don't know if they can. And so, I think Oklahoma can win by 3 touchdowns, but can they win by more than 4? I don't know. I'm going to take Kansas, too. I'm going to go with the Jayhawks to cover this one as well.
You know, out of solidarity, I want to do it. I do need to make up some games here on you guys, though. So I'm going to take Oklahoma State covering 31, and I don't like it. I don't like it. I want to pick Kansas, but you know, maybe this is an opposites play for me here, and I got to catch up.
Hey, Oklahoma State defense, maybe they get the shutout. I mean, their defense is
that's correct. That's what I'm kind of rooting for here is a 34-3 kind of game, I think.
Maybe a couple pick sixes or something.
Possible. Yeah. That's very possible with this Oklahoma State team. But one of the best defenses out there.
For sure.
All right, guys. Now we're going to move into our last four, our future Big 12 teams. Cincinnati at Tulane. Cincinnati, obviously, is a heavy favorite, 24.5. I saw Tulane play in person, and I came away from that game thinking, that's going to be
a damn good group of five teams. That was about as good as it got for Tulane this year.
Yeah. And, oh, my God, they have been on a pretty terrible streak here. So I'm going to go Cincy. Max?
Cincy.
Yeah, I go Cincy. Tulane can't protect the quarterback, and Cincy, I think, needs a big bounce back with style points after last week's close win against Navy.
Which we all got wrong.
Which we all got wrong.
We all did.
Next up, we got UCF at Temple. UCF, a 10.5-point favorite. Sam, start us off on this one.
I'm going to make amends for picking against UCF last week, so I'm going to take the Knights to win and cover at Temple here.
I'm going to take UCF as well.
And we'll make that a clean sweep. Next up, SMU at Houston.
Game of the damn week. Forget the Big Ten. Forget everybody else. It's time for this one.
This is a hell of a Lone Star matchup going on Saturday, and I'm going to start off with the Texpert. Sam, tell us what's going to happen.
We didn't say what the game was. We probably should say what the game was.
Yeah, I did.
Southwest Conference.
Did I not say it was SMU at Houston, Houston's a one-point favorite?
Let's go. I can't wait.
Number 19 SMU 7-0 against 6-1 Houston. Houston's -1, 6 p.m. Saturday night. That is going to be a fun game, by the way. I'm going to take SMU to win because this is the tough battle. You've got a really, really good offense, tons of skill position talent, but you've got a really good defense for SMU, and then you've got a really good defense at Houston, a good defensive front. I'm going to say that I think SMU's offense is going to be a little bit too much for Houston's defensive front, and I'm going to take the Ponies to win and cover.
I stayed up late watching Houston ECU. Didn't care for what I saw. I know that was a weird day. really weird day. The weirdest day you could possibly have in terms of, how late your day gets extended because of what, 5-hour delay there, Sam?
5 hours and 20
minutes. 520, yep. I'm going to take SMU +1. I'm almost slightly surprised that Houston is the favorite here.
I think it's just because of their defense. They've been one of the best. Max, they've been in the top 10 in stop rate pretty consistently.
Yes, sir.
So I think that's really why, and I understand why, and I wouldn't be shocked if they did win this game. The thing is, nobody has been able to pressure Tanner Mordecai this year. I think SMU's only given up 2 sacks. So can Houston do it? If they can do it, if Houston can pressure him, they can win this game. They absolutely can. I'm just betting that they won't be able to.
Yep.
And I will also take SMU and former Sooner quarterback Tanner Mordecai in this one. Last up for the week, we got Virginia at BYU.
This will actually be pretty fun to watch.
I think it will be fun to watch. I'll start us off and say I'm going to take Virginia. They're on a nice little run here, so I'm going to take the Cavs.
I'm going to go BYU. Coming off the win last week at Wazoo, the night game, 9:15. Actually, right after the SMU-Houston game, same ESPN2, you'll get Virginia BYU. I'm going to take the Cougars.
Yeah, the line's 2.5 in favor of BYU. Certainly we know that Bronco Mendenhall coming home here, he'll have his team ready for it. I'm sure this one's meaningful, I'm sure it always is. This Virginia offense is been wild to watch this year. They are very explosive. Brennan Armstrong's having a great year. I think I like Virginia plus 2.5 here, but BYU has they've been a little bit of a hard team to pick, but man, they, you know, great win last week against Washington State. Obviously, we know everything that was going on with Washington State, but I could see BYU pulling this out, and that home crowd for these late night games is just wild, and I love watching them, and I could see BYU pulling it out, but I think I'll take Virginia plus 2.5 here. Just offensively, they're a lot to handle.
Thanks, guys, and thanks to all of you, as always, for listening. We're here every Thursday in the Andy Staples Show and Friends feed, so if you haven't already, please subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find our stories on The Athletic. If you're not yet a subscriber to The Athletic, you can sign up with our latest promotional offer at theathletic.com/onetruepod. That's theathletic.com/onetruepod. You're going to get comprehensive coverages this Big 12 season and so much more, so now is a great time to sign up. We'll see you next time.